Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, everybody, to the second hour of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Thanks so much for being with us. 800-282-2882. If you want to call in, love to hear from some of you folks all across the country. We're going to be talking a little bit about the trans versus trans swim meet that occurred and some possible collusion shenanigans behind the scenes. Clay's website, Outkick, has some great reporting on that. We mentioned it yesterday. Updates to it today. Also, is Russia going to invade Ukraine? We could discuss that a little bit. I think the answer is probably. And is the Biden administration up to the challenge? The answer is certainly no. But fortunately for us, they're not invading the U.S., so it's not as much our problem. And also wanted to raise this question right now about what do we think the second year of the Biden regime is going to look like, given what we've already seen? I actually wrote at BuckSexton.com, Biden will be even worse in year two. I wrote an editorial making my case because, Clay, here's my thought on this. I want to run this by you. Oh, wait. First off, before you get to it, here's what Nancy Pelosi's assessment. Can we do the Pelosi assessment on year one? And then I want you to take my thesis. I think year two is going to be even worse for him. But play clip eight.
Today, we mark a proud anniversary. 1 year ago today, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were sworn in as President and Vice President of the United States. Since that historic day, we have seen one of the most impactful first years of a presidency in modern times. In modern times, getting shots in the arms of millions of people, putting money in pockets, delivering the best year of job creation on record.
Okay.
We can put a
pause. First of all, she's right in that it's the most impactful first year in the same way that Chernobyl was very impactful for the surrounding. It was impactful for the surrounding community, Clay. But I think it only gets worse for him. And throw inflation. Tell me what you think here. Inflation gets worse. I think his political capital dwindles. I think the Build Back Better plan is dead on arrival. And people are going to realize that he's done a horrible job managing the pandemic. Plus, we might have a war with Russia and Ukraine.
So I think the only advantage he might have in year two, and it's been almost impossible to predict, but if we're correct that basically everybody gets Omicron, and presuming that we don't end up with a new variant that is even worse, that is something that is much more deadly version of COVID, that we end up that direction going, I think that his one advantage is it's hard for me to believe that COVID is going to be worse in July and August and September as people come out of their summer breaks and as they start to look towards the fall. And so I don't think it's going to be accurate. But, Buck, I could see an argument where he says we vanquished COVID. That was the first battle that we had to win, and that he takes credit for it. Now, I think the natural biology of the virus is such that there's virtually nothing that we've done that has been impactful at all. And in fact, you might be able to argue that the data reflects that the choices we made actually prolonged and made COVID worse. In fact, I think there's a strong element of that. But that's the only thing that I can look towards going forward. And it's not anything that he's doing, but he might try to argue, hey, we finally beat COVID and therefore things are going to be better there. I don't think they're going to get anything really passed in Congress for the next year. And I think that, frankly, is going to become the case for 2023 and 2024 once you have a Republican House and probably a Republican Senate. But COVID is his only saving grace, I think, for the midterms if he's able to argue, hey, we finally beat it.
Well, I'd be so curious to see how they're going to try to balance this, because I think that that is their only play. So you're right. I mean, there's no way they're not going to say, look, we got you through COVID. But can they really say that if they're also telling us? Because remember, people are getting tired of this crap. They're finally saying enough is enough. I don't think the commies putting the fifth shot in my kid's arm is something I necessarily am willing to go through. Even if I was on board for Fauci year one and most of year two, I think people are getting tired of it. So if they line it up for a fall where, you know, what are they going to do? They're going to say we're done with shots, no more masks on planes. Are they really going to? Because I think if they let that stuff linger, their narrative is going to be a more challenging one for we vanquish the virus, because it's going to be well, you have to keep us in charge or else the virus will come back. Something like that to justify continued restrictions. But beyond that, they're also obviously very nervous, Clay. And this has come up with the way Jen Psaki's had to go around explaining that Joe Biden thinks this election, you know, will probably be legitimate. Josh Hawley, who we just had on recently, senator from Missouri, he points out Democrats, Joe Biden included, clearly do not accept elections that they don't win. If you got clip 7 for me, that would be fantastic.
What I heard was what Joe Biden said loud and clear, which is he's already making excuses for why he's going to lose in November. Democrats don't accept elections that they don't win. I mean, it happened in 2000. It happened in 2004. It happened in 2016. Now it's going to be 2022. I mean, if Joe Biden thought that his party was going to win these elections, then all would be fine. But he thinks, and because the polls suggest, he's going to lose them. His party's going to lose them, the House and the Senate, and therefore they're illegitimate. I mean, it's dangerous. It's wrong. It's ridiculous. And everybody knows it's ridiculous. And yet there he is out there saying it.
I think that's well said. And it's also emblematic of how nervous they are that he's already making those arguments. And what's amazing about it is, Buck, as soon as I saw that during the presser on Wednesday, that's exactly what they went after Donald Trump for. So the arguments that Biden is making, and I saw the Wall Street Journal ding him pretty aggressively, actually undercuts his voting rights play because he's arguing that the only way democracy can be saved is if there are laws that are passed that are beneficial theoretically to Democrats, which is not anything that the average independent out there is going to buy into. And to a larger context, I was amazed by how little discussion there has been over the things that are the most impactful on the American public. For instance, Buck, you know, there wasn't one single question during that press conference about the murder rate, about the border issues, or about really inflation in any kind of nitty gritty detail. And we talked about this, I think, earlier this week, Buck, where many people out there judge how things are going in the country based on how much it costs to fill up their gas, their car. And we're talking about moving towards $100 barrel of oil. That's the prediction that many people have for what might happen in 2022. Well, if you're not addressing that, then a lot of the other things that you might be doing don't cut through the noise. And I think it's indicative of how out of touch much of the press corps is, that there wasn't a question about the murder rate. There wasn't a question about gas prices, really. There wasn't a question about the border at all. And he took questions for 2 hours. And yet, if you're an average American out there, you feel like, in many ways, I think the Democratic Party is trying to address issues that don't seem of paramount importance to you, whether it's the voting rights bill, whether it is many of their priorities right now. And so I think that goes to the essence of the difficulty that Biden's going to have, to your point on things maybe get worse. I think he's going to have a lot of difficulty connecting with the larger American public because he's not a great communicator. And what happened with Barack Obama after he got whipped in 2010 and what happened with Bill Clinton after he got whipped in 1994 was both of those guys were able to find a way to adjust their behavior and be more moderate and lead to their reelection. I don't think Joe Biden has that skill set. I'm not sure he ever had it, but I certainly don't think he has it now.
I don't think he has the skill set. I also think his party doesn't have the desire. We have to look at what the Democrat Party actually is today. A lot of them, look at their response to all of this. We've got, look at the problems. Inflation, really high. What does the Democrat Party want to do? Spend trillions more of federal dollars, right? What's the problem that we have at the border right now? Tons of illegal immigration. What does the Democrat Party want to do? Essentially stop all immigration enforcement and allow even more people to come in illegally. Same thing with all the COVID restrictions. It's not working. It's making people not only miserable and increasingly going through real psychological duress because it's been now 2 years of this craziness. They want to double down and do even more extreme stuff after the less extreme things didn't even work. They look at things that you and I and the rational people listening to this program across America would take and say, okay, this failed and we need to do something differently. They look at it and say, we didn't do it enough. I mean, this is just the Democrat Party of today is just one long loop of real communism has never been tried, except it's, you know, real Democrat leftism has never been tried. It's never that they're wrong.
And Buck, I think we have to talk about too. I know the election is not until November, but if you look historically, what happens with many different Americans out there is in June and July and in August, when it's summer, when the kids are out of school, when everybody's busy, there isn't a great deal of focus on what's going on in the larger public policy arena. So we're coming up now on the end of January. We're probably talking about Joe Biden having to get things done February and March, or 2022 is out the window in terms of making any sort of substantial alterations in the trajectory of America. And so while we can say, hey, it's still 10 months until November and Election Day, the reality is summer people dial out. You come back after Labor Day and it's officially election season. You got 60 days. Well, they're not doing anything in Congress then. Things have to change in a hurry in order for public perception to be altered just based on the way everybody's paying attention. And I don't think that's very likely at all to happen. And so, yes, things can change, but they really need to change in February and March. And I don't know about you, but I don't feel like there's any substantial alteration of what we have seen occurring likely to be in February and March. I just really don't.
We like to talk about Legacy Box on this program because of what they do for families. They digitally transfer your family's memories captured on videotape and old family films and make them into digital files. All of a sudden, you can see those hours and hours of memories and moments that were so important that they're worth storing in your home, never to be lost or thrown away. Legacy Box makes this digital transfer process easy for you. You send them the tapes, the reels, the old pictures, the older slides, everything you've got. They hand transfer it onto digital files that you can just click to watch or forward to every family member to share it with them. Think of the most precious moments you can revisit. You know, those wedding tapes you've got, the sports events with kids, a toddler walking his first steps to the sound of a grandmother's voice telling a story. All of it comes back in a rush when you can hear and see those moments again.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us as we roll through the Friday edition of the program, take you into the weekend. Buck, a big debate of late has been this University of Pennsylvania swimmer that has for 3 years swam as a man and then decided to become a women's swimmer and has been dominating. And what's interesting is the NCAA, which is the body that oversees college athletics, has effectively acknowledged that their existing policies don't make sense. And in particular, they've said basically, if you stop your testosterone for 12 months, this is what's going on. So for people out there who have not paid attention to this story, we have got biological men that are deciding to identify as women and then are crushing women's athletes. And this swimmer who swam for 3 years as a man at the University of Pennsylvania is now swimming as a woman and may set an all-time record that has never existed before in women's college swimming. And there's an interesting quote here that one of my writers, Joe Kinsey, has been doing a great job covering at OutKick, if you're at all intrigued by this story. And it says, for trans women who have successfully suppressed testosterone for 12 months, the extent of muscle strength loss is only about 5% after 12 months. And this expert says testosterone suppression does not remove the athletic advantage acquired under high testosterone conditions at puberty, while the male musculoskeletal advantage is retained. That sounds a little bit complicated, but basically what it means, Buck, is men are bigger, stronger, and faster than women. And if you suddenly stop testosterone for a year, they're still able to produce 95% of the overall athletic dominance that they would have otherwise done, which means that a man is going to be better if he becomes a woman and decides to change his gender than a biological woman. It's crazy that we even have to have these conversations, but this is where we are.
You know, I talked about this story that your OutKick writer did yesterday, Clay, and it was one of those aha moments, because we were supposed to believe in this case, right, that the... So just so I'm clear, there's a is it a biological female who is competing against male? What was the actual transition status? It's tough to even keep up. So Leah Thomas is a biological male, also known as a male, who is competing against women.
Yes.
But Leah Thomas lost to another biological male who, it was a biological female who competes.
This is how confusing it's getting.
Against women or, against women. So the biological female who is now claiming to be a male still swims against women. Well, this is the part of this that, so why doesn't the biological female who says that, you know, can compete and beat Leah Thomas, and we know there's collusion, why isn't that individual swimming against men?
It's a great question. And by the way, it gets complicated. And this is, it gets complicated is probably going to become the subtext of all women's athletics going forward as this occurs, because this is not a big issue. To your point, if a biological woman decides that she wants to become a man, she has no chance of competing with male athletics, right? There's no way that that person would ever make a team most of the time, and certainly would never compete in the context of winning actual swim meets. And so the transgender activists like to say, well, this is not really a big deal. It cancels itself out. No, it doesn't, because biological men who decide to become women are the ones that are taking over women's athletics. And the scary part about this, Buck, is the number of actual female athletes that are willing to speak out against this is almost zero, because these college athlete women want to go to grad school, they want to get jobs, and they don't want their number one Google result to be questioning whether transgender athletes should be competing against them.
You swim in the Ivy League, for example, not because it's going to make you a millionaire, because it's not. You swim in the Ivy League so you can get a job working in, you know, Google communications or something, making 200 grand a year in your 20s, you know, your late 20s, whatever. That's why so they don't want to give that up, obviously. They're all terrified.
Yes. And by the way, there's arguments here, and this will be fascinating, that this may eventually end up at the Supreme Court. Because as women more and more are losing to biological men, there's going to be a question about how this is implicating Title IX, which requires even equality of scholarship. And if you've got a lot of biological men who are taking away, in theory, scholarships that would otherwise go to women, this is going to turn into a monster issue going forward. By the way, Mike Lindell, our buddy, inventor of MyPillow, has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. That's why they fit everyone with MyPillows, including these guys here that you're listening to, me and Buck. We have got incredible MyPillow products. And right now, my wife loves these. The My Slippers are 50% off with the promo code Clay and Buck. Slippers. My wife wears these all throughout the house. She bought them for all of her running buddies. She loves them. And you can check out the Overstock sale right now that includes deep discounts on select pillows, towels, sheets, and more. All you need to do is go to MyPillow.com, click on Radio Listener Specials, and you can get 50% off My Slippers, 60-day money-back guarantee, nothing to lose. You can enter the promo code Clay and Buck. You can also call 800-792-3269 for these great radio specials. Do it today.
Welcome back into the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are going to talk economics for a second here. The money in your bank account, your wages, the job market, inflation, how expensive is that cheeseburger you're hopefully going to get to eat tonight, or whatever you choose. We have someone who can shed light on all of that with us now, Art Laffer. You'll remember him as a former Reagan economic advisor and, you know, the Laffer curve. Art is with us now. Sir, great to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being with you.
Can we just have you react, because I think this is a good way to get us started here, to Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo here on what a great economy this is. Play it.
It's not that great. I mean, we have a shortage of labor. In fact, the number of people employed today is way below what it was before the pandemic occurred. What we have is participation rates are about the lowest rate then. We've caused all sorts of people to leave the labor force. Now, they're not unemployed. They just left and went home because we're giving them so much in the way of transfer payments and welfare that they're just better off being unemployed than they are
Here we go. We actually have the soundbite for you. So cut 13, play it.
As you say, these are, you know, strong numbers. By any measure now, we have a strong economy, you know, created over 6 million jobs last year. We're the only economy in the world that is stronger now than pre-pandemic. And the unemployment rate has fallen like a rock over the past year. So we look at those numbers. I mean, week to week, month to month, there are small variations, but it's a strong employment picture. You know, wages are up, jobs are up, growth is up. As you say, you know, obviously we have inflation, and that is what we have to deal with.
All right. I mean, just the 6 million jobs created. Can you dive into that for a second? Because that doesn't seem to pass the smell test.
Well, no, we lost about, if I'm using the numbers correctly here, we now lost something like 9 million in the pandemic, and now we've come back 6 million back, but it's not increasing any longer. We've come back there, so we're still 3 million jobs short of what we were at the before the pandemic, and we've had population growth since then. So as far as participation rates, we're way below where we were prior to the pandemic. It's been collapsing for a long time, and it's really shown a very sharp deterioration. So people have just left the labor force. They don't want to work because they're getting paid all these monies from the government. That's what's happening. And when she says that you have these wages rising, that's true. Wages went up 4% or something. Now, wages went up 4% and inflation went up 7%. If you like that calculation, I've got a bridge to sell you. The real wages are going down in this country because of inflation, and all of that's happening. And I just don't know where she got her PhD, but it sure she didn't take it in my class.
We're talking to Art Lab.
It's just a misuse of numbers. I just hate it when people do that because it's not true, and it leads you to know something that's not correct.
Did we fail Art Laffer as an economist that we did not bring your discipline into a discussion surrounding shutdowns? We made only the experts in health involved. When you look at it purely from an economic perspective, how would you assess the decisions made surrounding COVID from a shutdown, a lockdown, a taking kids out of school perspective?
You know, what I did was I looked at the growth in the economy from up through February of 2020, all right, and then just dot-lined that growth going forward, and how much real GDP have we lost because of the pandemic, the lockdowns, the masks, all that stuff put together, including the transfer payment. It's a huge, huge, huge amount. And I don't remember exactly what those numbers were. I wish I had my paper in front of me, but it's an enormous amount, something like a third of all GDP. And we're below the trend line where we were. Not only below the trend line, but it's growing slower. GDP growth is not keeping up with past numbers. And it didn't catch up the way it should have. So all of this counting growth and jobs from the bottom to the bottom to where we are now, it's way below what we should have had in job growth just to catch back up to where we were in February of 2020. It's, you know, we've got a long way to go to catch up, and then we've got a long way to go to make up for the losses that we had. This is not a pretty picture. I'm sorry to say, and I wish they wouldn't say it, but they keep saying it. I mean, does anyone think their wages are really going up just because they get a dollar increase in wages and the price of goods you buy goes up $2? I don't think so.
We're speaking to Art Laffer, former Reagan economic advisor. And Art, so what would happen if they actually, we keep hearing from Biden, one of the primary talking points for how this is all going to turn around is that the Build Back Better plan will make everything cheaper, which to those of us who are looking at inflation and government spending and the relationship thereof say, what do they not get here? But is can you explain to us exactly what their argument is and whether it holds water?
Well, I'll try to. I mean, you know, have you ever heard of a poor person spending himself into wealth? That's what they're proposing. We have a bad economy, and we want to take resources away from people who work and give them to people who don't work. And, you know, if you tax people who work and pay people who don't work, you're going to get a lot of people not working. And that is exactly what's happened in the U.S. economy. The only thing is they're not going on the unemployment rolls. That's true. They're going home and taking their payment checks and living nicely without working and without even trying to work.
So what should we be doing from your perspective? You talked about the graph that you did starting back in February of 2020. Things were on fire. in the Trump economy. Everything was working well. And then COVID arrived, almost like a neutron bomb that goes off there. What should we be doing right now if we wanted to try to get back to the growth trajectory that we had in February of 2020? Well,
let me first say what I think we should have done then.
Okay.
We should have had one bill of maybe $1 trillion, maybe less than that, just one, not the $3.5 trillion that was done then by the president and Congress, and not the $3.2 trillion that was done by Biden when he forgot into, and not the $6 trillion that he wants to do with Build Back Better. Just one bill to do Operation Warp Speed. Find that cure, find the remedies as fast as you possibly can. Trump did that beautifully. It was just a wonderful use of government and government resources to find a solution to a problem really quickly. He deregulated the healthcare industries and the laboratories and all of that. And we got a vaccine within a year. That's incredible. We got all these other remedies as well. All this other stuff that was just unbelievable. That's all that should have been done. Now, there are people who lost their jobs. That's true. But everyone lost. And, you know, whenever you transfer money, if you take from someone who's rich and you give the money to someone who's poor, by taking from the rich person, you're going to reduce that person's incentives to work, and he's going to work less. She's going to work less. If you give it to someone who's poor, you provide them with an alternative source of income, and they, too, are going to work less. Whenever you transfer resources, you cause a reduction in output, employment, and production, and that's just what we've done in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. And it's terrible, and you're seeing the consequences everywhere. It's not in unemployment rates. You've got a supply-side problem now. People don't want to work because they're getting paid too much by the government, and they don't feel the necessity of having to go to work. And it's going to inure very detrimentally to the long-term prosperity of the U.S., believe me when I tell you.
If you could get, Art, before we let you go, 60 seconds or so with Biden and whoever actually makes the decisions in this White House around him, but let's just say, we'll stipulate, Biden and his top advisors in the Oval Office, and just for the good of the American economy, the American people, what would you tell him to do that you think, theoretically, the Democrats may be willing to go along with or at least consider if they get crushed this fall?
Well, the one thing I think that the Democrats may be willing to consider that would be very good was have a payroll tax rate reduction. I mean, just reduce the payroll tax to half of what it is now. And then you would incentivize workers to come back to work, and you would be able to increase their incentive to go. I was hoping to get one comment with you on Ukraine, though, if you guys are interested in one quick comment.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you look at Ukraine, and I've been there, I've spent some time there, and I'm passably knowledgeable on it. You know, the damage is already done with the troops. You know, a credible threat, as the Soviets have posed on the border, achieves what a military victory could only achieve, but it does it without the use of force. Who's going to invest in the Ukraine today? No one. I don't care what happens on the border there. No one's going to invest. Ukraine has already been disastrously damaged. If you'll remember before Poroshenko, the Yukhanovich was a pro-Russian president of the Ukraine. Now, Zelensky now is not, but with this type of pressure on the Ukraine, there is no way from Sunday they're going to come back and be a productive, healthy nation for a long, long time.
Art, really quick question. I told my kids that I would ask you about this. How has Ferris Bueller changed your life, the fact that you are mentioned in that movie?
I loved it. I mean, it was sort of fun. I enjoyed it very, very much. I mean, I was caught flat-footed when I saw it the first time. I know Ben Stein. I knew his father very well, but my kids loved it, too. I've got 6 kids. I've got 13 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren. They love that scene. I just play it over and over and over again for them. But it did bother me, if I may say, all those students sitting there with their faces on the desk, drooling all over the desk and not paying attention. I mean, in my classes, I'd have snapped them out of that.
There we go. Art Laffer, everybody. Great question, Clay. Art, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks. Talk to you.
For many folks, this is the end of another busy work week. And how many of you woke up today and found yourself contending with pain? You don't have to have the most of demanding physical jobs to feel that pain. You know that. It can come as the result of aging, exercise, overexertion, just everyday living. But there is a solution out there. It's called Relief Factor. Created by doctors and perfected over 15 years of scientific research, Relief Factor was made for you. with four key ingredients. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free product which addresses joint, knee, hip, back, neck, and shoulder pain. Hundreds of thousands of people have ordered Relief Factor, and about 70% of them go on to order more. If you're currently in pain and you have a 7 in 10 chance to eliminate it, those are pretty good odds, right? And what do you have to lose? Look, Joshua in New Jersey took his chances with Relief Factor. He shares the most unusual story. He was in pain for years after being hit by a van while crossing the street in NYC. Taking Relief Factor, he felt good for the first time in years. He could play with his children again. Feels like he got his life back. Clay, how do our people get hooked up?
Join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. The $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you. Relieffactor.com, or you can call 800-4-RELIEF. Welcome back in. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Man, he was good. Art Laffer, great economist.
He's like the mailman. He always delivers.
Oh, he was fantastic. And we're going to play you that cut. For those of you out there who may not be familiar with the final question that I was asking him about the Ferris Bueller related, that is one of the most iconic moments in 1980s movies. And his name being dropped in there, I think he mentioned he has 6 kids, 13 grandkids, 4 great-grandkids. And the fact that they, to a large extent, have embraced that doesn't surprise me at all. Because he was such a young guy when he was advising Ronald Reagan. And the impact of his economic theories have been so monumental. It really is a shame that people like Art are not more involved right now. And to his point, Buck, I think it's a really good one. They are selling you a bill of goods when they try to say, hey, this is the fastest economic expansion we've ever seen. No. When we made 10 million people not work, you don't get credit for 6 million of those people coming back to work, because we're still talking about, I think it's 3.6 million people that had jobs in February of 2020 that are not working today. That's a monumental detriment in terms of our overall economic policy.
I mean, think about it this way. It's as though the Biden administration, after mandating all these different COVID restrictions, and as we know, they were able to use their leverage with federal funding for hospitals to get hospitals to go along with this and all across the board. But just in general, the Democrat Party, even more broadly, said, we're shutting down restaurants, we're shutting down sports arenas, all these things that have happened during the Biden presidency at different stages and in different ways. If you shut down all the restaurants in a city and then you open them back up, you don't get to say, I'm the greatest restaurateur in the history of this city. Like, that doesn't work, you know? And that's basically what they're doing with job creation. They're like, okay, well, now you can have your job again. You didn't create that job. You just stopped stealing that job from the people who had it.
And it wasn't your economic policies that led to those people being able to come back to work. If anything, your policies have made the recovery even slower. We have that clip, by the way. I'm a huge fan of Ferris Bueller. If by chance there is anyone out there listening to us right now that has never watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you should. But this is what Art Laffer getting name dropped in during the economics lecture sounded like in that movie.
Today, we have a similar debate over this. Anyone know what this is, class? Anyone? Anyone? Anyone seen this before? The Laffer curve. Anyone know what this says? It says that at this point on the revenue curve, you will get exactly the same amount of revenue as at this point.
So the argument, obviously, which was underlying so much of Ronald Reagan's economics, was if you cut taxes and deregulate, you are going to end up with more tax revenue as a result of the growth that will instill from the lower tax rates, which, by the way, I think is right. And Donald Trump policies, Buck, and this is what's so frustrating about when COVID hit, is frustrating on so many different levels. But if you go back and look at February of 2020, right before COVID hit, we had the lowest unemployment rate in modern history. We had the highest wage growth, white, black, Asian, Hispanic, didn't matter. Everybody was benefiting. We had a surging economy, the likes of which we frankly had never seen before in the history of America. his policies were working so well, in fact, Buck, that even today, as we're talking in almost February of 2022, 2 years later, we still haven't gotten back to where we were in February of 2020.
Well, this is why, I mean, the commies, the Democrat Marxists in our midst, it's really a faith-based tradition for them, actually, that they're relying on. And I can give you an example of this, right? Because, Clay, you're talking about the results that we all felt that were real, that actually happened, that people could see and feel. But what was the truth of the Obama administration? At one point, you'll remember, it was posed to President, then-President Obama, well, if raising taxes is going to hurt growth, productivity, and jobs, isn't that a bad idea? And he would just say, it's the right thing to do. Essentially, punishing people with greater taxation, even if it hurts the broader economy, is a function of morality, not a function of economics. And when you start to see that that is the primary motivation for a lot of what the Democrats do, this idea they're going to create greater fairness, even if they have to make greater misery to get us there, that's why it doesn't matter what the results under Trump were. That's why the fact that they kept saying he would crash the... Remember the Paul Krugman, the night of the election? Oh, the Dow is down, or, you know, futures are down 500 points back in 2016. Trump's economy was phenomenal. They don't care. They want to be in charge, and they want to tax you more because, as Obama said, Clay, it's the right thing to do.
We're going to come back third hour, final hour of the week, Buck. We've got Ian Miller. We share a lot of his graphs on the failure of our pandemic response. He's got a book coming out, but I think you guys are going to enjoy just some raw data. That's coming up to close out the final hour of the program. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Go subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you don't miss a single moment out there. This is the Clay and Buck Show.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.